Welcome, Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host for a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And you recognize him, Captain Brett Bartlett. He's also the founder of Exemplar Defense Solutions at exemplardefense.com. He has 32 years of exemplary, and I do mean, I can't spell it, but I can say it, exemplary law enforcement experience. So thanks for being on the show, Brett. Hey, a shout out to our sponsors. You know, Gauls is our title sponsor at Gauls.com. Don't forget about that 15% discount code. It's Radio15. Next time you go to Gauls.com, type in Radio15 in order to get 15% off your next purchase. Also, we have Complianttechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor, GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.live, SafeGuardRecruiting.com, and twobells.com. They built a new online store at leoroundtable.com, so check that out. Also, a shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press, Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com, Travis Yates, lawofficer.com. Thanks to all those entities who probably make this show happen. And guys, don't forget, we are on so many outlets, podcasts, Spotify, Apple iTunes. If it's a podcast, we're on it. We're on radio, social media, Rumble, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, X, True Social. All you have to do is go to leoroundtable.com. That'll tell you all the outlets that were on, the dates and times that were broadcast on radio, all that good stuff. So check that out as well. Now, let's whet the appetite. What in the world are we going to be talking about today? We've got I'll start with the main topic. You know, exponentially deteriorating Baltimore's lawlessness. It's spreading into the suburbs as Democrats lose control. So we're not going to limit this to Baltimore. We're going to be talking about the effect that's going on all over the country. That'll be our first topic. It's a little deep, but we're going to be talking about that. Because remember, our goal is to make you guys among the smartest people in the room. When you get in a room with other people and you're talking about these things, we want you guys to know what you're talking about. Also, J.C. Meade convicted of reckless homicide. A jury hung on a murder charge. Yeah, they wanted to get this guy for murder. I wish we had a video to go along with this, but we're going to be talking about that. Then we have New Mexico City is paying $6.5 million in the fatal shooting of a man during a mental health call. We got deputies tase a Florida man and you know, this is one of the occasions where the taser actually worked. And this guy was accused of a child molestation case, and he pulls out a knife and he ends up stabbing himself. But that's an interesting call. Top D.C. police officials facing firing amid a probe into alleged crime data cover-up. Does that sound familiar? Yeah, fudging the numbers. Then we have a machete-wielding man. He injures a canine. Brett, why in the world they deployed a canine on this dude with a freaking machete? I have no idea. It just kills me. And then finally, New Mexico City is paying. This is the mental health call again. We'll talk about that later. But if you're ready, Brett, let's go into the first main topic. And like I said, they have a tendency to be a little bit deeper. So I'm gonna go and talk about it from the article, but this is going to be wide ranging. We're not going to limit this to Baltimore. So this is in the libertydaily.com. I thought it was a great topic, great title. Exponentially deteriorating, Baltimore's lawlessness spreads into the suburbs as Democrats lose control. So in the article, it talks about Maryland as one of the many blue states. Of course, there's others that have transformed into a failed progressive experiment where net migration flows are negative as productive. Working class taxpayers are fleeing the state, not just because of high taxes and power bill crisis, but also because they've had enough of left-wing politicians and their failed criminal justice and social reforms that have fueled a decade of violent crime chaos. And of course, we've been covering that here. It says that they've extensively covered more than a decade of violent crime, riots, population collapse, and the exodus of taxpayers and businesses. That's certainly got to have repercussions on a jurisdiction. Now, they're talking about Baltimore County, but in this, left-wing politicians who masquerade, they consider them as masquerading as competent managers, but they're merely DEI activists who have unleashed years of lawlessness through failed policy. So it's not limited just to Baltimore. We've got a lot of other blue jurisdictions to where just things have gone south and people are fleeing. I mean, look at what's going on in New York. Look at what's happened in San Francisco. How about, do we need to go any further than Portland? I'm getting ready to go to the Carmel. I'm going to fly into the San Francisco airport. And Brett, I'm about 20 minutes away from downtown. I'm going nowhere near downtown, you know, San Francisco. Your thoughts on this one?
Well, it's just a matter of time. You know, it's pretty bad when some of these cities are so bad where people watching TV in Somalia are going, wow, man, I'm sure glad I don't live over in that city right there because it's a crap hole. But it's soft on crime. It's defund the police. They're paying the price. Some of the cities, it took a little bit longer. You know, in Tampa, just the last few days, they had one of those takeovers where a bunch of kids show up.
The takeovers.
They went to jail. A lot of them got stomped and went to jail. But, you know, they're just testing the water to see what happens. And if Tampa let them get away with it, that we'd see more of it. Well, if Baltimore would stomp on it, then it would stop. But, you know, these kids, these groups, they look to see what's happening. And if nothing happens, what's the lesson? Let's do it some more.
Yeah, no repercussions.
All over the country, these Democrat-led cities are having takeovers and lawlessness because the judges are apologizing to the bad guy rather than to the victims.
You know, we covered that takeover last week. I have to say, I mean, look, I know that we handle things a little differently here than they do in some of the in some of these other jurisdictions, you know, where they just kind of let the hoodlums run wild. But I was so impressed that we had multiple agencies and that they moved in to shut down both sides of that bridge.
Yeah.
I mean, could you imagine the pucker or the sphincter factor on that one? You know how many, what did we confiscated, what, 50 motorcycles or something around like that? It was just crazy. Yeah.
And they're not cheap, some of those little crotch rods.
That's going to put a hurting on somebody, so I
and
love
you know,
it.
They need to put out a release saying, listen, if you do this, you're going to go to the hospital. And what they're going to treat you for is concrete poisoning.
You know they can't do
and
that.
And there's no known cure. Other than taping you up and sending you to central booking.
So look, so the humor in what you guys just heard from Captain Brett Bartlett is that he used to be in charge of internal affairs.
I wasn't very good at it.
that is the humor with that.
But isn't that true though? You know, there should be a public service. If you break the law, you're going to go to jail.
Yeah.
If you hurt an officer, you're going to go to the hospital.
Yeah. These guys won't be doing that again anytime soon, or probably never again. They're out the bike. I mean, who can afford to write that, you know, $5,000-$10,000 check, right, you know, every time you do something stupid, you know?
And those racing laws are pretty tough. If you're standing there watching it, you get to go to jail too.
Wow. Yeah. You know, how about if those things are owned still by mom and dad and their little hoodlums go out there? That might even be a double whammy.
Maybe, but you wonder why the parents are letting the kids out to start with. So maybe they're not involved. So maybe it's not a big deal unless maybe their checkbook starts to get pounded on.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it was funny whenever we, and I know you and I, Brett and I are alike, you know, whenever we, you know, well, my traffic career wasn't long. But whenever I did, I hated to give tickets. And if I did stroke a kid, I knew that more than likely mom and dad were going to be adversely affected or insurance rates, all that stuff. So I took that. Dude, I have made more than one phone call in lieu of writing a ticket just to solve the problem. And that phone call to mom and dad, and they have to show up on the scene and stuff, and they don't get slammed with a $250 ticket, and their insurance rates don't go up, and they're like, they took care of it at home.
Well, you know, if you saw this out in Los Angeles, I think it was unanimously the city council passed an ordinance saying that officers can't pull people over for minor traffic violations because it affects
stops.
It affects black and brown people.
Yeah, adversely. Yeah. Yep. Isn't that something? Well, the people that live in those jurisdictions are going to pay dearly for that.
They'll pay the price.
Yeah.
And they call it a pretext stop. It's not a pretext stop.
Well,
if you see a violation, it's a violation. What you do with it, right? Now, if you knew that Joe the dope dealer was going down the street and you're pretty sure he had dope in his car and you pulled him over for having a headlight out, that's a pretext stop. Yeah. If you pull somebody over, just general public, for having a headlight out, that's not a pretext stop.
No, I get it. You're right. They do lump it in. Kind of like assault weapons, right?
Yeah. Well, they're going to pay the price. They're going to pay the price. In Colorado, in Denver, they tried to outlaw AR-15s, and the federal government stepped in and said, "Oh, you're not going to do that." That's going to be fun to watch.
You know, we've got Mary Lou Bartlett is on, so my girlfriend's on, so there she is, and
she's taking a break from repaving the driveway.
Yeah, you know, she called me the other day. I don't know if you knew that or not, but yeah, she called me. Lordy. She called me. We had a nice little conversation. So. And then we got Sharon Caudill on. She's on, and she's saying, hey, maybe they'll at least stay off the bridges. So it looks like Sharon is agreeing with us. So I love it. I love it. So we can.
Not sure.
I almost want to say, if your jurisdiction, you can't handle it, send your hoodlums down there here, and we'll take care of them in Tampa. But I don't want to go that far.
Let's go. Let's say Polk County.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Go see Grady Judd. It's not Polk. It's Imperial Polk County, according to
Grady imports criminals. He brings them in on those.
He advertises. Yeah.
On those innocent images cases. You know,
oh my gosh, she's got it, guys. If you're hooking up with some underage, and it's in Polk County, they should do some kind of a sentencing enhancement just based off of it being in Polk County. Because how stupid can you be for going driving in the Polk? I mean, even when I have to drive to Polk County and I'm on vacation somewhere else, I have to search my car and make sure I don't have anything in there that, you know, like a unserialized, you know, like a 3D printed gun or something like that. I don't want to get, you know, I don't get jammed up in Polk County.
If you go to Polk County for one of those things, for a meetup, like you told Glenna that one time, that's just stupid.
Don't even bring that out, Chauncey. All right. Moving along, guys. We've got about a minute before we come to our first commercial break. So let's dispatch.com. We'll go through this as much as I can before the commercial break, but a guy named Jason Mead, convicted of reckless homicide, but the jury was hung on a murder charge. So this guy was a Franklin County Sheriff's Office deputy. And so this jury found him out. Now he's a former deputy. So that there's a little sign there. They found him guilty of reckless homicide in the 2020 death of a guy named Casey Goodson Jr. So that's about 6 years ago. So it's been a while, but of course, you know, these trials take a little bit of time. There's bullet points. So they found him guilty of reckless homicide. And they also said the jury could not reach a unanimous decision on a murder charge, resulting in a mistrial for that specific count. And we're going to go on and what else happened here and let you guys decide on whether you have questions or not about this. Time for first commercial break. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
My family only cares about one thing, that I come home safe.
At Gall's, every order begins with a promise. Made with purpose. Stitched for support. Backed with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by Captain Brett Bartlett with Exumber Defense Solutions at exumberdefense.com. You know, we left off talking about an interesting story here. We got a former deputy, Jason Mead, convicted of reckless homicide. The jury got hung up on the murder charge. And just the bullet points are, jury found former Franklin County Sheriff's Office Deputy Jason Mead guilty of reckless homicide in the 2020 death of Casey Goodson Jr. They could not reach a unanimous decision on a murder charge. So again, reckless homicide versus murder. They nailed it with reckless homicide, not with a murder charge. Mead, the deputy, also, well, they say he shot Goodson six times after stating that he saw the bad guy waving a gun and then pointing it at him. But the family said that he was returning home from a dentist appointment, their son, with sandwiches, and that he had earbuds in at the time of the shooting. Now, we've got the mother, that's Tamala Payne, talking there. You know, she's talking here. We've got this former cop, you know, convicted. Now we're waiting on sentencing. The judge is David Young. Jurors were unable for a second time. So this has been multiple times. And the mom, the surviving mother, wants them to go a third time. But this is the second time they have failed to reach a decision on whether or not Deputy Mead was guilty of a murder in connection with the December 4th, 2020 shooting. I would argue that maybe they said he wasn't guilty of murder, and that's why they went with reckless homicide, although there still may be issues with that charge. It goes on to say some of the details. Deputy Mead's attorneys say that we don't think it's reckless for an officer to use deadly force when someone points a gun at him. That is according to the attorneys Mark Collins, Caitlin Stevens, and Steve Nodler. And they also go on to say that an issue that is remaining to be decided is the appropriate punishment for the reckless homicide, which is a third-degree felony. And this is the province of Judge Young and his decision, guided by sentencing factors, not sympathy. And they're going to be weighing more into that later. Now, Mead said that he saw Goodson, or bad guy, waving a gun with an extended magazine inside of a car. Mead, our deputy, did a U-turn, He follows him, sees the person walking towards the house with a gun in one hand and a plastic bag in the other. The person known as Goodson, the one he shot, had his hood up and moved quicker after seeing the deputy a short distance away. So now the deputy said in a statement that he orders Goodson, you know, the guy with the gun and the hood and the bag, multiple times to show his hands and put the gun down. But he alleged that Goodson turned his upper body and pointed the handgun at him. So Meade, our deputy, fired his department issued rifle. So he had a rifle out, which I got to admit, I love seeing rifles out. Six rounds and 100% accuracy. He hit the bad guy. And I say bad guy because he was noncompliant. He hit him all six times, five in the back, one in the side. Brett can explain that, why that could legally go down in a second. A handgun with an extended magazine was found near where Goodson fell down, and it said in the kitchen. The home belonged to Goodson's grandmother. Goodson died a short time later at a nearby hospital. The family said he was returning from a dentist appointment. He had sandwiches. Testimony at the first trial included that Goodson had earbuds and playing music at an unknown volume. Testimony from the first trial also showed that the Goodson's mother had texted him to alert him to police being in the area. That's another flag, right? Right, Brett? So Meade's case went to trial back in February of 2024, 2 years ago. That jury was unable to reach a unanimous verdict. So the case was rescheduled to go back to trial in 2025. It didn't happen. So now it went to 2026. So they've been trying to nail this cop. And it just like, you know, it sounds like mother, you know, really wanted them to go back for a third time. But I don't know if the double jeopardy is going to jump in here, Brett, but the floor is yours.
Well, only about one paragraph was dedicated to that article to telling about the case and the event. And if that's all true, then I don't understand why he's been to court at all. Somebody's running with a gun in their hand and they turn the gun towards me and I shoot them. I don't understand what the issue is. He described the gun. They found the gun. I don't understand what's going on with it. There's part of that article that just not telling the full story. But if that is the full story, then I think he's wrongly charged. Much less wrongly convicted.
So let me ask you this, Captain Brett. So you remember back in the days before we had body cams and stuff, and we would show up in court and the judge would take our word over the civilian counterpart, you know, in a case because we were sworn law enforcement, right? Yeah. But we have seen that change now. And so what if there is no video, no body cam on this one? Does it change your perspective?
It changes their perspective, not mine. It changes their perspective. You know, body cameras came out at the demand of neighborhood social groups wanting accountability for the cops. Well, they got it, and it turns out the cops were accountable. So now the other side, now they don't want the cops wearing cameras anymore because it showed by huge predominance that cops are doing the right thing. So I don't know. I don't understand this case at all. If I saw somebody run with a gun, I could describe the gun. They pointed the gun at me. I'm going to shoot them.
You know, even if they didn't point the gun at you, but if they were going to point the gun at you or,
right.
I mean,
right.
I mean, yeah. So can you explain to our audience, Captain, because six shots fired, I'm surprised you haven't even commented on the accuracy yet of that, because I mean, but he had a rifle.
Yeah.
So if we had Scott Stoddard on the show, Scott would be jumping up and down and clapping, but the bad guy got hit five in the back, one in the side. Can you explain how that maybe happened?
If you and I were, showing a demonstration, I could put a gun over my shoulder and point it at you and pull the trigger and hit you. With my back fully towards you, I could hit you with the gun over my shoulder.
Yeah. So where I'm going with this is that but the guy said that he turned his body towards him and then he pointed the gun at him. So it's very possible that and probable that whether he had a rifle or a gun or a pistol doesn't matter, but our cop, when he started shooting the bad guy, I suspect that the first shot went to the bad guy's side, and as the bad guy's turning away from him, the other five landed in the back.
It could be, and you know, and we've talked about this before, there's a lag time from the time that the eyes see the bad guy turning and pass the data to the brain, and the brain that says, yes, they're turning, and then sends a signal to the hand saying, stop shooting. There's time that passes.
Right.
And you can turn away from me faster then my brain can say, stop shooting, and the trigger stops pulling the trigger. Trigger finger stops pulling the trigger.
And it's going to take about a second and a half for all that to happen. And that's on a good day. It may take you and me a little longer. So,
if you're jacked up on fear and adrenaline and you're zeroed in on something, it's going to slow you down a little bit. But I don't understand this case. I think it's a miscarriage of justice.
All right. Well, look, I love it. Great insight on this, Captain. We're up for our second commercial break. So, guys, we got some great stuff coming up. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And they are committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing what they're called their CD3. That stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Device Technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now, it's called the Glove. It's not only helped officers tens of thousands of times, but they've actually had over 250,000 deployments. And guess what? No injuries, no deaths. An amazing stat. They've actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or a conductive energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they have virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. Go to ComplianTechnologies.com today. Tell them that Chip and Brent sent you, ComplianTechnologies.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We are joined by Captain Brett Bartlett, founder of Exumbra Defense Solutions at exumbradefense.com. Brett, are you ready to move on to a story with a video component or any last words from that last story?
Nope.
We had a cop that got, you know, in the grease, but I guess on the upside, reckless homicide versus the murder charge, yeah. I'd go with that. And it's up to the judge for the sentencing, apparently.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand what we're not missing or not seeing, but
well, Ohio might be on my list for places not to move to anywhere. Did you see the Wallet Hub article that came out last? We covered it last week, but the Wallet Hub, the 100 best places or the 50 best places to be a police officer, in the number one state was the state of California. I mean, yeah, I know. And then
you know, they tried that stuff on us before, and we looked at it covered closely, every year. And went, oh, there's no way.
Yeah, they're idiots over there. Yeah. But you know, the scary, why, the only reason why I want to cover it is because I don't want some poor soul, you know, some kid that's fresh out of college reading the article and thinking, you know, I'm going to go work for LAPD or San Francisco or wherever, you know, or even worse, maybe Oakland PD, any better, because they got morons writing at Wallet Hub and putting out this bad information. You know,
some of those youngins out there, they may not know the difference between a California agency and a Florida agency. They may not know.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, it's really, really East Coast policing and West Coast policing, guys, night and day.
I'm very disappointed in NYPD starting around COVID.
Yeah.
They just quit. They just stopped.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of disappointments. Well, look, it's, you know, we can always move to Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Rumble.com. This is Butter, our favorite law enforcement video channel. We've got New Mexico. So we're in New Mexico. Remember, we love Albuquerque, right? Because they do real police work in Albuquerque. So New Mexico City to pay $6.5 million in a fatal shooting of a man during a mental health call. So the first flag, just for people that are not used to this stuff, the first flag is the mental health call. So it's almost like they're hinting that they were only supposed to get a mental health response by calling law enforcement, you know, the guys with the guns, and they're trying to act like that makes it a difference. So anyhow, so that's the first flag in the article. They're saying that New Mexico, the city of New Mexico, is having to pay $6.5 million in a fatal shooting, you know, with a guy with a mental health issue. Okay. So Humboldt Park, Illinois. So I thought this, we're in Illinois. This said New Mexico City. Let's just go through
I think it's New Mexico.
Yeah, well,
Albuquerque. Yeah.
Is it Albuquerque? Well, you know what? For some reason, it's not lining up with what I have. So I'll tell you what.
It's Russian interference.
Is that what it is, you think?
Yeah, Putin.
So I'll tell you what. I hate to pivot, guys, but let me just pivot until I can figure out what went wrong with this one. Let me go to Lee County, Florida, real quick on this one. I apologize, but the stuff under the article was not from Albuquerque. So, and I will fix that on the commercial break. But let's jump to another story. Deputies tase a Florida man accused in a child molestation case after he pulls out a knife.
I'm not going to jail for nothing.
Drop the knife! Taser deployed!
Is he by himself?
Toby tased him.
I've got a knife.
Oh. Watch it, watch it.
Let me see your hands!
Drop the knife, drop the knife. Don't approach
me. Let me see, I know I don't. Let me see your hands!
Drop the knife, drop the knife.
Turn around, turn around! Put your hands behind your back!
Ma'am, lay down, police department.
And this is at Rumble.com. Again, this is Butter. This is actually a pretty wild story, and the video is priceless. So we're in Lee County, Florida. Body cam shows a Florida deputy state taser, a 60-year-old dude. It's a child molestation suspect. And he suddenly grabs a large kitchen knife. Now, the Lee County Sheriff's Office says that its fugitive warrants unit arrested this guy named Patrick Barron on Wednesday morning on an active felony warrant for lewd or lascivious molestation of involving a child. So he's accused child molester. Deputies say that they started investigating this guy back in January. There were allegations that he preyed on a child and engaged in inappropriate sexual conduct. Investigators say that the forensic evidence ultimately secured an arrest warrant. So it sounds like they got a pretty tight case on this guy. And I got to tell you, I'm pretty impressed with the guys that were on scene taking this guy into custody. You'll find out why in a minute. So according to Barron's criminal probable cause affidavit, the child told deputies that he showed inappropriate images on a tablet and inappropriately touched her during the incident at a family home. That's even worse, right? Forensic interview conducted at the Children's Advocacy Center reportedly supported the allegations. The victim later identified this guy in a photo lineup. So on Wednesday, detectives move in to Barron's home, and they're serving the warrant. Deputies say they observed him inside the home. Now, deputies are clearly on the outside of the home. He's inside, and the door is open, and the window's open, too. Body cam footage from a responding deputy shows Barron, he grabs a large kitchen knife, threatens to harm himself, and keeps repeating to the deputy that, hey, I'm not going to go to jail. So the deputy has got his duty pistol out, and Brett, I don't know if you were as impressed as me, but deputy transitions very quickly from the gun to the taser, deploys the taser. I know body cams make things look further away than they are. It looks like a decent distance. Makes contact. Yep. Dude's in the kitchen, falls backward. Remember, the deputy's on the outside of the house, falls backward. And he's like, he's, you know what it is? I'm going to tell you exactly what it was. It was, that's wrong. Here you go. That's what you heard. Yeah, that's a nasty sound, isn't it? Yeah. So he was being cycled on the side of the kitchen cabinet and countertop. So he's later found that it takes him a while to go in and they grab him, but the other deputies, go in while this guy is keeping his finger on it. I think he took more than a 5-second ride. He stabbed himself once in the stomach during the incident. He's treated at the hospital, medically cleared, transported to the Lee County Jail, where I'm assuming he currently resides at. What'd you think about this one, Captain?
It was a very good hit with the taser. I was kind of hoping that when he fell backwards that he'd knock over a frying pan full of hot grease or something, but that just didn't happen. At least give him some punishment. But I just thought it's odd, and we see this a lot, when people are being tasered and they're being ordered to do things, you cannot comply with that order. They were telling him to roll over. You can't do that when you're being tasered. It's almost like when a canine is chewing on your junk. You're just not going to respond to orders other than, I need to live. But it was a good outcome. He went to jail, and he won't last long in a Florida jail, I'm thinking.
All right. I love it. I love it. So no problems with the shoot. What do you think about the transition? From the taser.
Yeah. And that's why you always have your gun on your opposite side of the taser. So there's a very distinctive set of movements that you need to get one out versus the other. We've seen some videos in the past years where that just didn't work out well at all. And but maybe they put a damper on that. The taser and the gun got to be on opposite sides.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm with you. Because what could happen? What could go wrong?
Oh, you pull the wrong thing and you pull the trigger. That happened at least, I think Los Angeles, maybe another California city. At their underground train station years ago, and another one in a smaller town recently, where a female.
Was that Kim? No, Kim Potter was the one that shot the guy. She thought it was her apartment, and it was.
I don't remember the name, apartment. but you even heard her yell, "Taser, taser, taser," and then she pulled the trigger on a firearm and killed the guy.
Does this not show you how valuable training is, Brett? At all these different levels,
it's all about training, which policemen never, ever, ever get enough of.
Yeah. You know, so if you're an agency head and you're watching the show, and we have plenty chiefs and sheriffs that are even active, you know, on the show, you know, that are panelists. If you didn't grow up as a trainer, you may not get it. And we get it that you may not get it, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that we have found in historically that the people that grew up training their teachers, you can't get rid of it. It's just part of your core. And those leaders that have that background have a tendency, at least in my opinion, to be more receptive to training. They realize the importance of it. It lowers liability and increases safety. So, you know, very important. Now, the guys that don't. So I guess what I'm trying to say is just be open and receptive to that. You know, Brett, do you agree?
Yeah. I think if I was the chief, I would have 1 week out of four, one week a month, be a stand down for training. Oh, yeah. But you'd have to have enough people where you could afford to do that, because one of the chiefs used to tell us, I got to fill zones.
Right.
Got to make people, I got to fill zones. Well, what if we shoot somebody in air? That cost of doing business, we'll live with it.
I'm with you.
Cost of doing business. You know, you cannot take somebody out once a year for driving, for firearms, and expect them to pick up and retain those skills. You cannot do that.
I totally agree. Well, I tell you what, we've got thegatewaypundit.com. We've got some D.C. officials in trouble for alleged crime data cover-up. So it sounds a little, we've heard this. We've even experienced some of this at our own agency.
I'll talk about that.
Okay. Top D.C. officials or police officials, they're facing firing amid a probe in the alleged crime data cover-up. I have some questions about this, too. Multiple senior-level officials in the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Police Department, they're facing termination, that's serious, or discipline as investigations into alleged manipulation of crime statistics intensify. So according to multiple law enforcement sources who spoke with the Washington Post, but I don't think it really necessarily names them, several high-ranking officers, including two assistant chiefs, have received or are expected to receive disciplinary notices tied to an internal affairs probe into crime data practices. So I guess at least it's an IA probe, which means it's administrative, but it's not criminal. But guys, it's time to go to our commercial break. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And GunLearn is the first and only company that offers a step-by-step program that takes you from your present knowledge level to become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist. Now, if you have that certification, even if it's 5 years old, here's the good news and here's what's new. GunLearn, they've actually partnered with Smarter Degree, and through Smarter Degree's university partners, that is now worth college credit. So becoming a certified firearm specialist, now it has college credits attached to it. That's a big deal. And, you know, they've been doing this back since 1996. They've been teaching everything that LEOs, that's law enforcement officers, need to know about firearms and ammunition to all facets of law enforcement. You can start today with online training, or you can sign up and register to attend a live seminar. Now, if you have your own agency, if you're chief or sheriff, you can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. You can go to gunlearn.com to get more information. Hook up with the founder, Dan O'Kelly. Again, that is gunlearn.com. You'll be very glad that you did. Gunlearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBluck, and I'm your host. We're joined by Captain Brett Bartlett from Exumber Defense Solutions at exumberdefense.com. And I think that we had left off talking about this crime stat cover-up in the Washington, D.C. area. We're talking about the Metropolitan Police Department. So we've got some high-ranking officials that they're saying either going to be, you know, fired or severely disciplined. We've got Assistant Chief Lachey McCall and Second District Commander Savoy. I'm not even going to try to do the first name. They've both been placed on administrative leave. And so that's not necessarily a good sign. But when you're admin leave without pay, that's certainly a bad sign. And both of these people have been linked to the crime statistics investigation where they're being alleged to have lied or manipulated the city's crime statistics. And then we got a former 3rd District Commander, Michael Pilliam. He's also under review as well. They say he's the former commander, so I don't know what happened there. Well, I guess they're just saying that because he's placed on leave in 2025 after allegations of crime classifications in his district were altered. So apparently it's a little bit of an issue and it's been going on since, what, last year or so. Pilliam has denied wrongdoing but remains subject to possible discipline. Then we've got another one, Assistant Chief Andre Wright, facing a separate investigation after allegedly inappropriate text messages were found on his phone. That sounds like another investigation. He's already been placed on admin leave. And then the internal probe is focused on whether department supervisors downgraded serious crimes to less severe categories, potentially making crime rates appear lower than what they were. And Brett, correct me if I'm wrong, we just had the National Guard come in to help out with the situation there. And those numbers got good overnight, I thought, or so I thought. What do you think?
Yeah, they did go down. It's one of the best years for homicide in D.C. that they can remember, if there's a best year. But, you know, these people got caught fudging the numbers, trying to make their people look good, and they were browbeating their subordinates to change stuff, and you just can't do that. Now, I remember this years ago at Tampa Police, and we used UCR. Remember UCR, the FBI UCR. That's what everybody uses.
Uniform crime report.
Yeah, and we weren't doing it right. We weren't reporting right. So we got training, and the lieutenants, we were given it like a manual, UCR manual, and we would go through the reports, and let's say if it was a burglary versus a trespass, we would add an addendum saying this is let's say it wasn't a burglary, maybe a burglary by Florida law, but not a burglary by UCR. So we would put in there, add an addendum, this is by UCR a trespass. The bad guy still went to jail for burglary. In other words, we weren't dropping charges, but we were just trying to be more accurate. And of course, what did it look like? Well, you guys are fudging the numbers. No, we weren't. We're just trying to get back to being more accurate UCR reporting versus what we've been doing for all those years prior to that.
So let me ask you this, though. I remember when TPD, we would get, well, let's just say they evolved to where if there was a string of car burglaries, but they happened overnight within like a one block area, they would consider that one offense.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah, well, that's a UCR guideline.
That is the guideline you're saying.
Yeah, you can't pick and choose that. Now, what was a little gray was how far apart could they be in distance? How far apart could they be in time? There was not much I remember about that. Okay. And I imagine we each interpret a different way, but either report UCR correctly or don't report anything.
Yeah.
You know, we hadn't been doing it.
So if we, I guess the big noticeable flag was that we have been doing it right or wrong. And if we were doing it wrong, and then all of a sudden you go and do it the right way, but then you have a huge reduction as a result and stuff, that definitely raises eyebrows.
Well, so, I don't know if you remember this, but you remember that that record system we used? Remember we wrote our reports in the computer?
Versedex.
That was NIBRS, National Incident-Based Recording System. NIBRS was supposed to come after UCR. It was more accurate. But the problem was, if we had all gone to NIBRS, all of a sudden we'd be seeing spikes in crime because they're being reported according to NIBRS. And a lot of agencies didn't want to do that because there's a spike in crime. So a lot of agencies, even though UCR is well outdated, they still use UCR. Okay, because that system that we got, I think it was out of Canada, was based around NIBRS.
I was getting ready to say that. It is a Canadian company. I was saying, I've got the answer why everything went south, Brett. It's a Canada company.
Yeah. For our readers, do some Google search in UCR versus NIBRS, NIBRS, and do some research, find out why that was the common thing, but a lot of agencies never went with it.
All right. Good to know. Well, thanks. A lot of very interesting and some fresh data. So some stuff I wasn't even aware of. So thanks, Captain. Hey, let's do this. Let's go back to that Chicago story at rumble.com. This is part of the channel. Chicago police. They have a body cam footage that shows deadly shooting after this guy hits a woman, a bus, and other cars. So this is this is kind of crazy. So we're in Humboldt Park, Illinois, and police said that after 5 o'clock or 5:30 PM, officers attempted to conduct an investigatory stop on a vehicle that was wanted in connection with a shooting that happened on the nearby Eisenhower Expressway earlier in the day. Now, the vehicle is a white Mercedes. It flees from police, and a pursuit is initiated. Now, we have body cam showing the moments that two Chicago police officers approached this white Mercedes. It crashed into a bus. It looked like a city bus service after the pursuit by the officer. So, you know what? It looks like there was a backup in traffic, and it looks like the guy's getting off of a side street and making a right-hand turn, and he can't quite make it because the bus is in the way, and his left front fender clips the right front of the bus, and he can't get. Cops start swarming him, so what's he do? Reverse, and pounds it forward, and reverses. He's slamming into an unmarked police SUV behind him. They had a couple of cops that got bailed out of. He's going back and forth and back and forth, ramming in both directions and stuff. Brett, I was waiting. The first video, we have a surveillance video with no sound. So I was waiting for someone to start shooting the sucker before he hurt somebody. Yeah. I mean, crap. And then when we saw the body cams, we heard the shots. You know, you can see they did. Still a little later than what I would have liked, but.
Get a fucking car! I'll fucking shoot you! Get out! 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 Get out of the fucking car! I'll kill you! I'll kill you! Get out of the car!
The officers can be heard yelling, "Hey, get out of the car. We're going to shoot." And the driver then starts ramming the bus and the unmarked car, you know, behind him. And then the officers fire at least 5 shots at the passenger window of the car, which maybe you can address, because that was we had people on both sides. We even had the male officer on the driver's side had his hand, and he was trying to punch through the glass window and hit the driver just before this back and forth started going. And he wasn't even able to break the glass. And then another officer says, "Hey, I see he's been hit," and bystanders are heard pleading with the police not to shoot. And then the police respond by saying, "Hey, this dude's wanted for murder." And the suspect's taken to Mount Sinai Hospital, multiple gunshot wounds. He's pronounced dead, identified as Derek Jordan. Captain Brett.
Did you notice that the officers there were doing the dance? They cannot stand still. They're dancing. They're absolutely dancing around because they're jacked up on fear and adrenaline, mostly adrenaline. Nobody was in charge. Nobody was given commands. Nobody took control of that situation. Everybody was screaming commands like, "That's going to work." I noticed the guy on the bus, the bus video, he's just looking out the window. And, you know, if I was on a bus and there was a shooting 6 feet, I think I'd go ahead and lay it on down. But, you know, that's their city, I guess. But, yeah, it's really hard to train for this. But you've got to pick a position, stay in position, don't dance, don't move around. Let one person give commands, somebody be in charge. If you got to pull the trigger, pull the trigger. I saw one officer with his gun in his hand trying to break the glass with the tip of his gun, with the muzzle of his gun.
On the passenger side.
That never, ever works. And what's likely to happen, you're likely to fire a shot.
That was scary. He's jamming that pistol with his hand on it. I don't know if his hand was on the trigger or not, but you're right. He's trying to break it through the front of the barrel.
You know what that technique is called? How dare you disregard my authority? That's why it's not. It has no bearing on anything other than I'm in charge and you're not. You can't break the glass with the muzzle of your gun.
Yeah.
I mean, and if you do, you might negligently put your finger on the trigger and fire a shot when you're not ready to do that.
Any thing in hindsight you would do? Like, I mean, what about the vehicle that stopped behind the bad guy's car? If he would have got up close and personal, but it was a cool car. He didn't have any.
Here's what I would have said. And of course, we're all subject to looking at it, right? We all have the hindsight of 2020. I would have told those officers, "Back up, get out of the way. Back up, get out of the way. I'm in charge. Back up, get out of the way. Bill, you give commands. Everybody else, back up, get out of the way. Quit dancing."
Well, I'm glad we didn't have any good guys hit, because, you know, our officer was firing through the passenger window into the cockpit. And I'm just glad we didn't have over penetration.
Yep.
Well, Brett, it's been another fantastic show.
I appreciate thanks for our listeners and Rick and Betty and let's see who else. Sharon and Todd and Sailor.
Yeah. The list is long and distinguished, and those are just the people that are posting for us. So thanks, guys, for watching the show. Everybody over on Rumble as well, LinkedIn, thank you guys for watching the show. I do want to mention the Wounded Blue, thewoundedblue.org. Lieutenant Randy Sutton's 501c3, helping cops out in a world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD and other issues. I support them monthly. If you're looking for a good organization to support that could use your funding, the Wounded Blue, thewoundedblue.org. And also, don't forget, Captain Bartlett's got Exumbra Defense Solutions at exumbradefense.com. And guys, please support our sponsors to go to the great lengths to bring this good quality content to you. We have our title sponsor, Goals at Goals.com. Don't forget the discount code Radio15, ComplyTechnologies.com, GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.live, SafeGuardRecruiting.com, TubeBells.com. We'll see you guys back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.